So, Berto, have you ever taken a personality test or some other kind of test in order to get hired or at your job? You know, you're applying for a job, and they in addition to interviewing you, they make you you know, complete this personality test to see like how screwed up you are. Have you ever done that before?
You know, not as part of a job interview. I've certainly done personality tests before with you, even.
I've submitted you to a few.
Right.
Subjected you to
submitted me. Yeah.
But you've done them at work as a part of like.
Oh yeah, I've done that as part of training and things like that, but not as part of a job interview. I've
training.
Done,
what do you mean training?
There were classes that I took. Where it was
how to communicate better,
things like that. And then so part of the class was like, okay, you're going to take this personality test and we're going to talk about how to work with different kinds of personalities. Okay.
But you've never been tested as a part of being hired?
Not that I can remember.
Okay, well, that's what I want to talk about today, because you actually asked that we talk about this.
Yeah, but I've had a lot of jobs, so I might have forgotten.
Yeah, that's true. I'm surprised you haven't had a job as a tester of personalities for hiring, actually.
Well, maybe in the future.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the widespread use of psychological testing for hiring and the debate about it, because there's a lot we can say and there's a lot of research on it. This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor. Who are you, Berto?
My name is Humberto Castañeda. I am in a Bare Naked Ladies tribute band.
And could you give us a little taste of your stylings?
In Chickadee China, the Chinese chicken, you have a drumstick and your brain stops sticking.
So I heard that you used to think that was like legit hip hop back in the day.
Well, yeah, you're outing me. There was a time, I mean, keep in mind, what's this, from the 70s, 60s?
Yeah, way back. Way back.
There was a time where I wasn't as exposed to good hip hop, good rap. So I grouped that together with like, oh yeah, have you heard of NWA? Sure. Have you heard of Bare Naked Ladies? Oh man.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So I have actually taken some tests too at work. This is long ago. I remember taking a Myers-Briggs test in the mid-90s when I was, before I was a therapist, I was working at a group home for troubled youth, and we all took a Myers-Briggs, and I remember we all sat around as staff trying to learn what the results meant regarding our style of work and what our strengths and weaknesses were and whatnot.
Is the Myers-Briggs the one that does like ENTJ, INTJ?
Yeah.
So I did that one for work, again, not to get hired, but as part of a training. And we were doing it in order to learn about different personalities and how you might relate differently to them and stuff like that.
And I remember also taking another test before I even wanted to be in psychology. I was in marketing and business for a very short amount of time. That was my bachelor's degree, was in business and marketing. And I had a job as a researcher, a researching assistant really, at a hospital in Kirkland. Actually, kind of by where, just across the freeway from where you are.
Evergreen?
Yeah, Evergreen Medical Center. And they had all the employees do a very extensive personality test, and I still have it somewhere in my closet. And it had like several different domains that it measured you on. Mm. And I remember having really no idea why I was doing it or how to interpret the results. I just remember thinking like, I just remember being very boggled. My 23-year-old mind was just kind of boggled as to why are we doing this and what's the purpose.
Right.
But I kept it. I still have it, and I should bust it out. How many workers in the U.S. are being assessed currently, do you think? You know, when
by
they
these
ask
tests,
any tests, whether for hiring or
otherwise. That's a great question. I would say 10 million.
Percentage.
So 20%.
60%.
60%?
What percentage of new hires at Fortune 500 companies have been given the MBTI in the past decade? That's the Myers-Briggs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, according to that, I'll say 50%.
80%.
80%?
Yeah. So that's new hires. So those are I mean, from the language that I was reading, it's after you have been hired, they give you the Myers-Briggs
wow.
as a way of trying, again, to help you fit in better or learn your strengths and weaknesses.
Wow, that's shocking.
Yeah. How much money per year does this industry make? What, you know, there's Myers-Briggs and there's like a ton of other kinds of assessments and there's firms that specialize in providing these assessments for people. How much money in the United States do you think?
$1 billion.
Half a billion
wow.
a year. And how fast is it growing each year in terms of the revenue?
It's growing at
percentage.
A rate of...
Percentage-wise.
15%.
Oh, awesome. Between 10 and 20%.
Wow.
I think you just nailed it there. Do you know about any laws that pertain to the use of tests in the workplace?
Laws. Oh, well, yeah, you probably can't... it probably has to be anonymized, and you probably can't use results.
True.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
It's not true.
Well, you probably can't use
results. How would it work if it was anonymized?
I guess what I mean is... Other workers probably can't just access someone's results.
They can.
Right?
They can.
They
actually.
Can?
Yeah. I mean, it's not medically protected information. It's like your resume mm-hmm. or when you get interviewed, when the interviewer jots notes down in terms of your responses, that's not private information.
I guess you're right from a legal standpoint. I was thinking.
I mean, you're harmed by, if Microsoft does some test on someone and releases it publicly mm-hmm. and that person is harmed by that, then you can sue them. But there's no, it's not medical, it's not patient health information like the way it probably should be treated.
Okay, well, for one thing, you probably cannot discriminate against people based on the results of the test.
Well, we're going to get into that actually in terms of, what can't they discriminate? Isn't that the whole point? You're trying to discriminate between a good hire and a bad hire. You're trying to discriminate between someone who's going to be good for the job and someone who's not going to be good for the job. That's the whole point of the test.
Ouch. Okay. Wow. So, okay, can you definitely not segment it by race or gender?
Yeah, but so the tests don't ask for that. The tests don't ask what is your gender and what is your race.
But I could see that. I could see an unethical company asking those additional questions and then sorting.
Well, they'll know based on other kinds of things, either by face to face or other kinds of demographics that they ask for, or just
know. What if they were doing things like, okay, we're going to track how many women are different personality types compared to how many men and how compared to by race?
Yeah. So. Yeah, but no, it's not against the law. And we'll get more into the specifics on that because it's a little shady. But
is anything illegal?
Well, so there's two main laws that pertain. One is that you can't discriminate against people who have disabilities. Mm-hmm. And so if someone has major depression and the test reveals that and you don't want to hire someone who's depressed because you're worried about their job performance, then you have discriminated against them based on mental illness.
Does that make sense? Like you can totally discriminate based on subtle differences.
Yeah.
But large differences are out.
Well, yeah, another way of putting it is there are symptoms of depression that a lot of employers will use as indications as to whether or not someone is someone they should hire. For instance, how motivated they are.
Right.
How much energy they have, how productive they are. Well, if you're depressed, you're gonna have less motivation. You're gonna have less self-esteem. You're gonna have less energy. You're going to be tired a lot. You're going to miss work maybe more often than other people. And so, it's considered a disability in the same way that you can't discriminate against someone because they can't walk or they have trouble with their hands.
The analogy would be if someone walks in with a limp, you could discriminate against them. But if they walk in missing a leg, you have to hire them.
Yeah. Well, I think it's more complicated than that, of course.
Of course. But seriously, it's interesting because a lot of times they might say like, wow, they show some symptoms of maybe lacking motivation. I don't think I want to hire them.
Right.
But then they might say like, oh no, this person's fully clinically depressed. It's like, oh, okay, we have to hire them?
Right.
Wow.
Right. So Now, it gets into proving that the... So someone would have to sue, and then the court would have to determine if the employer actually discriminated purely based or mainly based on, or at least partially based on the fact that you have this quote-unquote disability, instead of general terms like, well, we determined that this person wasn't really fit for the job as well as other people because they seemed to be not a go-getter. They didn't they didn't have self-initiation, or what do they call those? I love a lot of the business terms. That, you know, another law that is, that pertains, it was an act, a federal act passed in 1988, that's the Employee Polygraph Protection Act, that basically prevents employers from using the polygraph.
Oh, okay.
Because they were most polygraph. This is something I learned in prep for this episode, was most polygraphs in the 60s, 70s, and 80s were not for criminal proceedings or criminal purposes, trying to determine if someone had committed a crime or something. It was to determine if what sort of person someone was in terms of hiring them.
They would use them in jobs interviews?
Yeah, they would say, you know, have you ever embezzled money from your other jobs? Have you ever cut corners at work or something? And actually, now that I think about it, my friends who became police officers, I don't know if they still do, but in the past, they had to pass a polygraph themselves.
Are polygraphs reliable?
No, absolutely not. Well, I think what you mean is valid. No, they're not valid measures. They've been debunked a billion times over. You can, one, trick them, because it's all based on, it's trying to guess if you're lying based on your physiological, reaction, I suppose. So
like a psychopath might not have an issue with.
Right. Or you might just be really good at remaining calm as you lie, especially if you learn how to do that. Because there are techniques that you can follow that make it so you don't do that. Plus, the false positive lies are when you get asked a question, even though you're not lying, but you're kind of worried that you're going to be seen as lying, then your body might have a reaction.
Especially if you're strapped up to a device.
Yeah, and you're just like, oh God, I hope my body doesn't freak out because that will indicate I'm lying.
You know? And I'm not. I really am not. lying. Ah.
And science has debunked polygraph. Now, what we've talked about in other episodes is the general public doesn't know that. And so
I see.
Police and lawyers will sometimes use polygraph basically to trick people into telling the truth. Mm-hmm. So they'll say, well, so you're saying you weren't there on the night of blah, blah, blah. Care to do a polygraph on that? You know? And if the person's like, fuck you, I did it. You know what I mean? Or they do the polygraph and you tell the person administering it to lie and say they didn't pass it. And then this, you know, the subject in question is now sort of pressured into settling or something, you know, plea deal or something. It's like, look, we got a polygraph that you failed it. So I don't know what to tell you. And the guy's like, crap, they caught me. You know, whereas if you're like, what? How did that happen? I wasn't lying. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's sort of a litmus test. Anyway. what are assessments used for percentage wise between post hiring and pre hiring?
What are assessments used for?
So, like, how of the assessments being used in the workplace, what percentage are used to hire someone as opposed to helping you at your job?
Okay. That's a good one. I'd say, so it was 60%, 80% of the work. I would say 50-50.
Not bad. It's about 20% are used for hiring, and the rest. So the vast majority are used for after.
That's actually more encouraging.
Yeah. Okay. So the basic method that this follows that I read, which makes sense, but because when I hear about testing, what popped in my head was, all they do is they just give this personality test and they just hire based on that. And that's not how it goes. They work it into all the other normal ways. So you get the resumes, you whittle it down, you interview, you whittle it down, you administer the assessments, you whittle it down, mm-hmm. you have another interview, you whittle it down. Maybe even there's an observation like, you know, show me your work or do your thing or, you know,
perform, monkey.
Build a house for me, you know. And the guy's like, I'm a programmer. Why am I asking me that? Just joking. And then once all those things are done, you consider everything. So the assessments aren't like a do or die situation.
Right.
You know, it's like it's part of the bigger picture. All right. So here are some of the claims and services that I read online. I love all the business speech that they give, but here's a quote. It's a Hogan organization. The Hogan Archive contains case studies demonstrating ROI or return on investment across virtually every industry for nearly all job titles listed in the U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Information Network, unquote. What's wrong with this claim? Were you listening closely?
Ooh, it seems biased.
Yeah, well, it's on their website, yeah, so they're obviously saying they're basically saying that there's proof of return on investment, you know, because that's the big thing for business, right?
But that's how they sell their services.
If you're gonna pay for a service, is there a return on investment? So, you know, because the whole thing is all dollars and cents, right? It's like, okay, if I'm Microsoft and I'm gonna hire Hogan to test all of our applicants. And it's going to cost $1 million. Are we going to make $2 million or save $2 million as a result of that? And they're saying, I'll read it again. And when you hear it, it should pop out to you. The Hogan Archive contains case studies demonstrating ROI across. Did you hear it?
Yeah.
what is it?
Well, the Hogan Archive, their archive contains studies.
It's case study. So maybe you're not familiar with. Research terms, but case studies are not—they're not necessarily valid because they are one or two cases. Yeah, essentially, they could be cherry picked is the thing, and they're not in order to.
Like, hey, this guy seemed
successful. It's essentially an anecdote, right? Of one person. Now, research case studies are a valid way of researching things, especially when it's a complex thing like.
Sure.
Like,
and you want qualitative data about a sequence of things.
Yeah. But of course, if you're a business, you're probably going to choose the case studies that.
And we do that in my job because, you know, when we go perform our bare naked covers, we do case studies with the audience members to see how they react throughout the set.
Right. We have case studies that prove that we have 100% likability. It just so happens that we ask people. Who liked us, and then we go up to them, and we have to ask them to fill out a survey.
And even with there, it's a 1% likability.
Yeah. The other thing is I don't know how you would measure return on investment on a service like this. I mean, imagine the factors involved, right? Like you have Microsoft 1 year not doing any personality assessment, mm-hmm. and then the next year you have them doing personality assessment. Well. Are you know, across all departments, right?
And then you track the individual contributions for that year from those people compared to the ones that were already there, and not accounting for cross pollination somehow,
Or the economy. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's too many factors, so there's no way to know.
But you could supposedly, or not supposedly, I could imagine you could follow a number of people randomized over n amount of time and see. If over time they perform better or worse, or if they...
How do you define perform better?
I mean only based on the company's definitions themselves.
Right, but like, that's a hard thing to measure, right? It's usually based on managers rating their employees.
Totally. I'm not saying that it might not mean anything in the real world, but if you could tell, hey, Microsoft, we ran a Microsoft-specific study with... You know, tracking 100 individuals over the last 3 years, blah, 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 blah. And using your ratings, these perform better on your terms.
Yeah.
Then Microsoft might be like, oh, that's interesting.
Right. Yeah. Here's another quote. Our assessments have never been legally challenged in court.
That's a scary quote. Yeah, imagine you're advertising your services, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, come eat my hamburgers. Yeah. I have never been sued for killing anybody.
Yeah. I've never been successfully sued, for killing anyone with my hamburgers. Here's another one. Get a clear blueprint of a candidate's key natural behaviors and talents. So get a clear blueprint, of a candidate's key natural behaviors and talents. Natural behaviors. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Determine exactly how these traits fit with your open position.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Zero in on areas where there's a mismatch, where the candidate will likely face challenges and maybe even failure. Determine realistically if weaknesses will respond to training or coaching, or if they simply must be accepted as is. Predict job performance. Evaluate career derailers.
Career derailers.
Identify and mitigate performance risks that can degrade leadership success, erode relationships, and damage professional reputation. Identify potential. Find and develop your organization's next generation of top talent. So there's all that, you know, kind of business speak.
I guess, you know, like if you can imagine if they embed themselves pretty deeply in a vertical and they really know what that vertical is all about, what historically is successful, what kind of people, blah, blah, blah. And then they follow that for a while. You could imagine them having some good data. But broadly speaking, it seems intractable.
Well, right. So that's the science is if, for instance, Microsoft, you identify exemplary employees.
And not even, you'd have to go even deeper. Like, we're going to be looking at developers and maybe even a specific type of developer.
Right. So, because every job requires a different set of skills, maybe.
Right.
But you take all of your employees and you identify the best ones, which is an arbitrary thing. It's like, who evaluates that? Again, it's probably usually managers, and it's probably people that they just sort of like better, you know?
Yeah.
And then you test them. And you identify their personality type and you average that out. And then you look for employees that you look for applicants who match that.
And of course,
profile.
That could lead to a self-fulfilling culture, which could be toxic.
Right.
It could not be the thing that you need to survive in the next decade. And
totally. Now, of course, people who hire will say, we think about all that stuff. We try to, we don't just blanketly hire someone if their personality thing. And to me, again, at first when I thought about this, I was like, this seems kind of bullshit. It's like using psychology tests from people who don't really know how to use them to hire people. It seems really stupid. But what alternative do we have? You know, right now, the state of affairs isn't better than that.
No, you ask a few random questions and then you make some gut feel decision.
Yeah, you look at a resume, you have some interviews, and then and that's based on them and they could fake it, you know, and they provide references to you that they want you to call.
Yeah.
And you as the observer or your team has to figure it out. And as a person who, you know, hires people at Antioch, I've hired many professors, and I've also interviewed people for the program. So I've interviewed hundreds of students to get into the program, and I've probably interviewed, I don't know, dozens of professors who are applying to Antioch to work there. And I can tell you that it is so hard to figure this stuff out. I have hired, this is long ago, 20 years ago or something, I hired someone. I was on a committee that ended up hiring someone that was awful. That was like one of the worst coworkers I've ever worked with, and everyone agreed. And to this day, there are people who like hate me but they're like, Kirk, weren't you on that person's hiring committee? And I'm like, God damn it! But that person seemed perfect.
Yeah.
Their resume was stellar. They interviewed so well.
Right.
They said everything just right. But their real personality, it doesn't come out. And what if we had a personality test? I wonder if that would have helped.
Interesting.
You know?
I don't know. I mean, it might, but there's still so much. I have worked with people in different jobs. I've worked with people that have severe vertical, like, personality weirdnesses.
When you say vertical, what are you meaning by that?
I mean, like, pick one category and go deep on that.
Oh.
And so, like, you know, examples would be someone who really does not do well in groups. Someone who cannot speak up, cannot speak their mind. Right. Stuff like that, right? Or the other extreme, someone who cannot be quiet or cannot, like, you know, sort of self-regulate, right? But the output has sometimes been so valuable,
right,
that you know.
Right. So different jobs require different skills, right, and no one's perfect. And so, right, where are the sacrifices? Of course, right, everyone would want everyone to be perfect in all areas, right, but of course, no one's like that. And actually, what I ended up resorting to was something that Paul David, my predecessor, did, and I followed his lead, was that I would always hire people that I knew,
yeah,
or that I knew who knew them.
Yeah.
Of the instructors, we hired in the CFT program in the last year something like 5 or 6 people, and all of them I know either personally very well,
mm-hmm,
or I know someone who knows them very well, mm-hmm, and I grilled them. I was just like, so, you know, do you recommend that person? Oh, yeah, she is the best. I really need you to tell me honestly, because I don't want to make a mistake here. Oh, yeah, she's the best. If you had one bad thing to say about her, what would it be? And, you know, they're, well, I don't know, maybe this or that. You know, tell me more. I need to know this, you know, because if this is a bad hire, I'm gonna come after you. You know what I mean? And the people that we hired are... And my university, we have several programs. We have, you know, 6 or 7 programs. Mm-hmm. And to my observation, my program is the only program that hires like that. We're the only program that, at least to the extent that we do, everyone we've hired has been people that along those lines, you know, or students who graduate. I mean, I'm a student from the program,
right,
and Paul hired me right after I graduated. So I'm a typical example of that.
Yeah.
And whereas other programs, they do it the normal way,
yeah,
where they put out a national search, because that's the typical university model, is international searches,
yeah,
especially in psychology programs, you know, because you got to pull from talent all over the country, all over the world.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening, I've just seen these processes fail. Mm-hmm. One, they hire the totally wrong person, or they hire someone who's great but doesn't have any loyalty and quits after a year, after you've invested. The thing about university hires is these are long-term jobs.
Right.
I was considered the new guy, even though I had been there 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Do you know? Especially back in the day. Sure. Now there's a lot of new people in Antioch. But
how many years have you been there?
I've been teaching since 97, so it's 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, it is exactly 20 years this month.
Like when I met you,
actually,
you'd already
week,
been
this week,
there.
It is exactly 20 years.
Oh, my gosh. When I met you, you'd already been there almost a decade.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. 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 I've been there a long ass time. I mean, Paul hired me when I was 26.
Yeah.
I mean, and knew nothing. You know, I was such a green. I felt like I knew less than my classmates did, you know? And I don't know why he hired me, honestly. But anyway, it's just been a slow climb since then. But the point is what I'm saying here is, when I know someone very well,
mm-hmm,
like I last year I hired a student who was in my class for like 2 or 3 years. I knew her extremely well.
I see.
And then she applied, and I was like, I know this person so well. We don't need to interview this person.
Right.
I know that, you know, and then there are other people that actually will apply who I know very well, and I won't hire them, you know,
yeah,
because I'm like, I don't think that's
because you know them.
Right.
Or, yeah.
And so I, as a personality assessor, will work that into my evaluation,
yeah,
process, but it's based on personal experience, you know.
I've always felt that if you can do it, a program where you can let people do the job for a bit and then decide.
Well, they call that probation.
Yeah.
Which is never really followed. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it does work in some industries where you have things like contract work and
right.
full-time
contract,
work.
Yeah.
Yeah, because exactly. then what you do, I mean, this used to be the case in one of my old jobs, is you would basically just have a low barrier to entry for a contract job. You'd still interview and stuff like that, but it wouldn't feel so final, you know?
It's less of a commitment.
Yeah, and then if they weren't working out, there was no agreement. Like, you could let them go in 2 weeks.
Right.
And granted, that would suck, but it was still way better. And then at some point, you're like, you know what? We have an opening for a full-time position, and then this person has been proving themselves.
Right. So there's pros to that. The con with that is it creates this massively oppressive system for the contract worker.
Yes, this is true.
In which they are basically required to do better than their peers
right.
by working 80 hours a week and sacrificing their family for the job.
Right.
And, you know, it's unfair. And it's basically anti-labor. Do you know what I mean?
It can be that way, yeah.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about the measures, the different tests that are used in employment after the break. What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right. We're back from the break. If you haven't become a patron of the podcast, do so now by going to patreon.com. We always love it when people become patrons of the podcast. When you become a patron, you get access to all of our deep dives into various different things, our secret episodes, of which probably we do about every week. There's probably a patron-only episode, maybe every other week. Okay, let's get into the measures. So there are four different kinds of measures that are used. Can you identify those different categories of psychological tests that are used?
Emotional... intelligence.
Yeah. I mean, that's, well,
is
continue.
It more granular than that or
no, it's bigger than that.
Oh, it's bigger than that. Okay. Well, maybe,
well, in a sense, I don't know.
Okay. So interpersonal relationships or like how you get along with others.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then,
so those two that you just said, we're going to put under what we call personality tests.
Oh, I see.
So those are all under the umbrella of personality testing.
Oh, okay. So intelligence testing?
Yeah. So cognitive abilities, number two.
Okay. So there's personality tests. There's cognitive. There is maybe adjustment or like...
that's personality.
Is that still personality? Maybe how you deal with stress. Is that still personality?
Yeah, it's still personality.
What is that? Left.
Well, there's components of personality that maybe you're thinking are not categories among themselves. But the other two categories are, they call them integrity tests, which are to see how honest you are and how likely you are to embezzle from the company, essentially.
I see.
And the other one are clinical measures of psychopathology, which are sometimes,
are
sometimes
I could see that.
Under the personality umbrella, but we're going to bust those out
okay.
in their own category. So let's talk about personality measures first. There are many different ones that are used. The Caliper profile. There's a California measure. The PAI. Gallup Strengths Finder. That one is trying to find your strengths instead of deficits. Emotional intelligence tests, as you indicated. The Myers-Briggs. Incidentally, the people who make Myers-Briggs publicly state it should not be used in the workplace as a valid measure because they say that's more subtle than that. It's not like you can look at a particular Myers-Briggs type indicator and say, oh, that person is blank. You know, it's not that simple is what they're saying.
Well, I'm an ENTJ, aren't I?
Are you?
I think I was an ENTJ.
I'm whatever the teacher is. I just remember when you look at the different labels, I'm the teacher. but anyway, which I don't know, it's like narcissistic and know-it-all-y. I don't know. And the 16 personality factor questionnaire, big five sort of things. So things like questions on tests like this are simple things. Like, when I find myself in a boring situation, I usually tune out and daydream.
What?
True or false? When a bit of tact or convincing is needed to get people moving, I'm usually the one who does it.
Right.
That kind of thing. So there are It's usually very simple questions like that. Like, I am frequently upset at other people, or I sometimes have trouble managing my anger, or I deal with stress by drinking, or I like people, or I have good self-esteem. Like, these are the kinds of questions that are on these things.
And it must go with my personality type that as you're naming these questions, I'm like, I want to take these tests again.
Yeah. Well, if you want to, I mean, I have access to hundreds of measures if you want to take them. So we could redo some of them.
Well, because I think as a kid, I learned, obviously not truthfully, but my impression was, if I do good on tests, it means I'm really smart. So then I always feel like, oh, ask me questions that I can answer. Yeah.
Well, incidentally, we did do an IQ test on you, and you scored like in the 99.9 percentile. So,
but that was the one I didn't care for as much. I want the ones that are easier, that I can just answer with my gut. Yeah.
So these are personality tests, and right away you can tell, well, there's something kind of funny here because it's all based on self-report. You're not objectively testing someone's personality.
Right.
You're asking them to answer questions.
You're not observing them for 20 years.
Right.
And
you're not analyzing them. You're just asking them questions in terms. And so if, for instance, you're at Microsoft and you're hiring someone and you give them a test that one of these, like the 16 personality factor questionnaire, and one of the questions is, I don't deal well with authority. Mm-hmm. How do you think the applicant is going to answer that question?
Yeah. It's like, screw the man.
Yeah. You know, I frequently disobey my superiors, you know.
It's fuck like the police.
Yeah, it's like, I wonder what they're looking for at this job. Okay, so number two, the integrity tests. This is the second category we're going to talk about. It's used to figure out if someone is, how honest they are, how devious they are, how psychopathic they are. Basically, are they going to steal from the employer in some way or another? How much money annually do American businesses lose from employee theft each year?
Ooh, all American businesses from theft?
From employees only.
From not employee theft?
Yeah, not like Winona Ryder theft, but
$10 million.
$20 billion.
No, come on. Yeah. Get real.
Well, our economy is, you know, what, in the trillion?
$20 billion?
Yeah.
That must include some Wall Street shenanigans.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you at least two of those dollars are from me. Like, I take a pen from work every now and then or something.
$20 billion.
Percentage of business failures. What percentage of business fail each year? Or no, what percentage of businesses... So of all the businesses that fail, what percentage are due, at least in part, to employee theft?
Oh, come on. 5%.
30%.
No. How can this be?
It's a major problem.
Like 30%?
I actually have a friend of a friend, let's call her a friend of a friend, who is still paying off her debt to society as a result of embezzling tens of thousands of dollars from her workplace.
Oh my God.
I actually had a client in the beginning of my career who was mandated to therapy because he had embezzled a bunch of money from his place of business.
Do you realize that what we need to do to make money then is go into business where I'll infiltrate companies and steal as much as I can. Clearly there's like $20 billion there for the taking.
Yeah.
And you consult companies on how to reduce employee crime. And between the two of us, we'll just...
I'll say, well, first off...
Do not hire...
Well, no, first off, don't... Well, but we'll be in cahoots. Yeah, so I'll say, first off, Colombians are are spotless, man. You don't worry.
Right.
Don't worry about them.
Yeah.
So this is why the polygraph was... Its primary use was to try to figure out who these people were. Common tests are the London House PSI, the Employee Attitude Inventory EAI, the Reed Report, the Stanley Survey, and I like this one, the Trustworthiness Attitude Survey.
Very direct.
Examples, again, this is all self-report of questions. Will everyone steal at work if the conditions are right?
Oh, interesting.
What would you say to that? Yes or no?
Well, I would say no, but I could see why someone would say yes, because they think it's just a matter of the conditions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Another question. Do you believe you are too honest to steal at work?
Right. I could, again, well, that one's interesting. I think if I were thinking that I might steal from work, I might still say I am too honest to steal from work.
Another question. Do you think it is humanly possible for the average person to be completely honest on the job?
Right. Okay. These are the, I can now see how they do this, because I was sitting here thinking, like, what questions are they going to ask? But these general ones, they'll say, oh, well, I mean, if you generalize, well, sure, no one's really honest.
Yeah.
And then they can get you there.
Right.
It's like, aha.
Right. All right. So the research, what do you think? Do they work? Do these integrity tests actually identify people who are likely to embezzle?
Less than 50% success, I'm going to think.
Well, so you're saying...
They do work to some extent, but not... I'm going to give it like a 40% success rate.
Okay. It's hard to put it in a percentile, sure. but yeah, you're right. That's the way I would put it. Not the 40%, but the first bit. They basically work sort of in some situations. And some research has actually found that they work pretty well.
Oh, interesting.
For example, one study looked at a group of convenience stores. So they're hiring cashiers and stuff to work at a convenience store. And they use the PSI integrity test to select employees. And guess what reduction in inventory shrinkage due to theft? So right. they know exactly, in a 7-Eleven, they know generally every month how much inventory they've lost due to shrinkage. They don't know if it's from the employee or from customers.
Right.
So how much did, when they actually started using this test to hire people, what reduction in
the
theft
disappearance of their
percentage wise did they experience at this convenience store?
All right, 20% reduction.
50%.
50, wow.
Yeah.
See, that's not bad.
No.
That's a survey you want to implement.
Right.
Even now 20% would have been
now good. Now that's, you know, maybe a place where there's a fair amount of theft, right? Because I'm trying to think at Antioch with my job, I'm trying to figure out like how or what I would steal.
Yeah, paper and pens, right?
Yeah, like there's nothing that they have that I want, you know what I mean, or that anyone wants, other than like papers and pens, which you know can't be that expensive.
And at other places, like if you work in an IT or like a computer place, you'd literally have to steal the computers, like extra monitors, extra, you know, because it's not like you have a whole bunch of. Unless you have, maybe if it's a place that has free drinks and free food, I suppose you could be loading your car every night with that.
Yeah. Other studies show similar results, maybe not quite as dramatic, but similar results. And so there is some utility to using integrity tests. Number three, we have clinical measures that identify psychopathology, like the MMPI-2, the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, second edition that I had
used. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't I come out like borderline psychopathy?
No, it revealed, I can't remember the exact personality type it revealed. You had a couple peaks, but none of them, I don't think any of them were in the pathology range.
Yeah.
And I'd have to look that up again. But I know I still have it. I actually have it in the garage. I know where it is. But anyway, questions like, I certainly feel worthless sometimes. Or...
Right.
My sex life is satisfactory.
Right.
Or I am very seldom troubled by constipation.
That's a great one.
Once in a while, I think of things too bad to talk about.
Yeah, that's a subtle, good question.
So you can tell by these questions that they're much more personal than some of the questions we've talked about so far.
Right.
And these are, you know, the MMPI are used by psychologists to diagnose people.
Yeah.
And that's its primary usage. And the MMPI is being used right now in hiring procedures.
That seems a little sketchier.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, we had personality measures, integrity measures, we had clinical measures, and number four, we have cognitive measures, IQ tests, this sort of thing. To me, this is the most, aside from the integrity measures, which
I think makes sense. The IQ tests make total sense.
Sure.
If you're hiring someone that, and they need to be smart, because IQ in general is associated with a lot of employment performance kinds right. of things. Even if you're working at the 7-Eleven, the yeah. smarter you are, the generally speaking, not everybody, the more likely you're going to perform better. You're yeah. going to be able to figure stuff out better. Your working memory is better. Your brain speed is faster. Your logic ability is better. You keep track of things. Your task, what do you call it? Sequencing and following that right. task are more enhanced.
Even the military has a minimum. It's pretty low, right? But they have a minimum IQ to qualify for military.
Interesting. So to me, this makes sense. Now, many jobs, the IQ, what the general IQ test measures is what we call G. And it might, so if you're going to become like your band, your tribute band,
yeah.
do you need someone to be a genius?
Yeah, or? Well, pretty close to it. I mean, because, you know, like people are ruthless out there and you need to be smart enough to be able to deal with the criticisms.
Yeah, like you're not hip hop.
So if you're not at least a 80, 85 IQ,
yeah.
you don't belong in my band.
Right. So with your band, you're looking for a different aptitude, a different yeah. cognitive ability that doesn't have anything to do with necessarily with what IQ tests measure. Right. What you're looking for is the ability. Well, what are the different things you'd be looking for?
Well, for example, for a drummer, I don't care how dumb they are, as long as they can hit that beat on time.
Well, everyone knows that drummers are dumb anyways.
kidding. If Paul's out there, calm down. Carlito's way. All right. But, musicianship. Are they sensitive to the music, the pieces we're playing? Do they have that artistic, you know? Right.
So that's a different thing that maybe there's a measure for, but yeah. might not be related to IQ.
Right.
So what's the difference between these? One of these is not like the others. So I'll say them again. You got the personality measures. Mm-hmm. You got the integrity measures. Mm-hmm. You have the clinical measures. Mm-hmm. And you have the IQ measures or the cognitive ability measures.
Right.
Which one of these is not like the others?
I think the clinical one.
How so?
Well, I mean, for one thing, when you get diagnosed, that can have medical implications. That could even have, I suppose, legal implications down the line if yeah. someone can
right.
claim
so,
that. You know.
Right, absolutely. So we'll get into that in a second. What's another thing that's different about at least one of these?
About a different one, not yeah. the one I mentioned?
Well, you could be, but I'm looking for a different distinguishing factor.
Well, let's see. IQ measures ask you questions, try to see how smart is more. Okay, so I'd say that the one that seems more subjective than the others to me is the honesty one, even though it did seem like it had some good results.
Yeah. Well, actually, if we extend what you're saying, the personality, integrity, and clinical measures are all subjective. And the cognitive is the most objective. It could be a bad day mm-hmm. and everything could get thrown off on the personality thing.
I see what you're saying.
You could lie on the integrity thing. Mm-hmm. The psychopathology test, you could lie on that one too. IQ, you can't fake that.
So you might have a bad day, but you can't fake being good at it.
Right. You might have a bad... Right, exactly.
Yeah, like so you might be stressed, low sleep, whatever, and that might
And your number it. Might come down yeah. as a result of that. But you can't
you
fake...
Sure can't be like,
you can't
well,
fake being a genius.
Right, like today I'm going to be 160. Yeah. Just for today.
Yeah. So, whereas the other ones, if you know how to do it... And I'm actually telling you, as someone myself who has studied this and I administer these tests, I could absolutely game the system if I had to.
Right.
If someone... I could... I know these tests... forwards and backwards. I know exactly what to do. I know how to evade the validity tests. I would know exactly if for instance I wanted to fake having an illness, I would know what questions
which ones to
what question. Now yeah. what other people don't know necessarily in terms of faking is there are questions in there designed to trick you to revealing that you're faking.
Yeah.
Questions like Well, maybe I shouldn't even tell you what the questions are.
But the point is that there's some that are meant to be that if you're trying to on purpose, that you don't know what you're doing.
Right. But I know what I'm doing, and I actually know those questions and can identify them.
Whereas with IQ, it's like at most you could practice some of the classes of problems and, you know, improve a couple points, but...
But not much.
Yeah.
You know, the kinds of things on an IQ test are the ability to remember a string of numbers.
Wait, what did you just say?
Okay. So what's one of the problems that we haven't identified yet with these tests with regards to hiring?
By the way, the remembering one was one of my worst ones. I hate remembering things.
Well, you still did amazingly well, though. You were still like in the 97th percentile.
I think it's because I used the whole, you know, that thing where you visualize and you put little pieces inside of a castle or a...
Well, so I want to be... The reason why you remember that is because the test is designed to be smarter than the smartest human being.
Sure.
So at a certain point, you got to a point where you're like, I can't do that.
I can't do that, yeah.
But
it felt frustrating.
You did better than 97% of everyone else. So think how hard it was for other people.
Okay. I give. Okay. So ask me the question again.
What's a problem, a major problem with these tests that we haven't discussed yet?
Okay, well, I know with IQ, there's been a lot of controversy in the past about whether or not it would vary based on your background, like socioeconomic or cultural background.
Yeah, exactly. That's the main problem that we haven't talked about yet. There are major cultural differences, one, in the way people respond to these tests, and two, with the way they were designed. Mm. All these tests were normed on white Americans, and a lot of them have been normed on certain regions of white Americans.
Many years ago.
Yeah, like the MMPI, for instance. It's called the Minnesota Multiphasic, you know. And when they study this sort of thing, for instance, the IQ test, even though you have, say, an African-American person who is just as smart as someone else, they will score sometimes 10 points on average lower than their counterpart because the questions are basically the questions assume that you understand certain things baseline. And different cultures, different ethnicities, different backgrounds will give you a different set of baseline knowledge that will be different and throw you off. Hispanic people tend to also score, I think, 5 points lower on average. And that's a big difference. The difference between 110 IQ and 100 IQ, that's a huge leap. That's almost a standard deviation. And so it's a big deal. Also, with personality tests, it's probably even worse with those, right?
So, you know,
you grow up in the hood, and lots of people around you are struggling economically, and in order to survive, you've got to survive, and if that means occasionally shoplifting, then that's what that means, right?
Right.
And so, you know, the integrity questions that we went over, will everyone steal at work if the conditions are right? Mm. Well, if you come from a different background and a different set of mores, then people are going to answer that question differently. And that's just one very crude example as to what sort of backgrounds could affect the way you would answer these questions, you know?
Did you see there was a thing today or yesterday where a female reporter was asking a football player a question about how they run their lines or something like that. And the football player said, he just laughed. He's like, it's funny to hear a woman asking about, you know, lines and how I run the lines. And that was his answer.
Oh, no.
And then later he clarified, not in the same conference later, he's like, well, I guess I should have said reporter.
Right.
That was his clarification. I guess I should have said report.
Yeah.
It's like so biased. And you know, this is a person who's like a professional reporter for sports.
Right. Yeah. I hope there is something like this out there, but if there isn't, someone should make it. Is women reporters in men's sports and what their experience is like, because right. I just can't imagine the variety of stories. Of course, there are very respectful dudes in pro sports for sure, but the you know, I'm sure these people have a story. Okay.
Yeah. By the way, one bias that I have noticed that I have is when I hear someone speaking in English with a thick accent from certain parts of the world, but not all, my mind automatically feels like they're not as smart.
Totally. That's why, like in Game of Thrones and stuff, whenever mm-hmm. they want someone who's supposed to be sort of foolish, mm-hmm. they have what I believe they call a Cockney accent,
right?
Or a certain kind of English accent. Or in America, it's Southern, a Georgian accent. Yeah. It's the dumbest. We're stupid humans. Yeah. like we hear an accent and we immediately have ideas as to their intelligence.
I hear a certain refined British accent. I'm like, I'm listening to every word that person is saying.
Yeah. All right. So effectiveness. What percentage of organizations actually have data to prove that there is a positive business impact on their assessment strategy? What percentage of businesses have data that say, yep, our assessment strategy has a positive impact on our...
25%.
Close 14%. So it's not many. Now, it's hard to measure, and maybe a lot of businesses don't actually bother with measuring mm-hmm. it because it's not that big of a deal to them, but not that many. But, you know, 14%, that's not bad. All right.
It's not nothing, yeah.
Right. So what does the research say, the non-business funded research, you know, what is the mm-hmm. actual research? Well, compared to other hiring selection practices, personality assessments are the least effective among those four.
Interesting.
Yeah. Whereas cognitive ability, mm-hmm. IQ tests, and integrity tests are actually, they're actually better at predicting someone's performance at a job.
Interesting.
So when you're hiring someone, the IQ test makes sense and the integrity test makes sense, but the personality assessment and the psychopathology assessments, those are not as predictive of job performance. But kind of, and you know, if you have the time, you could throw that in there if you want. The thing is it's all about validity, right?
Right.
Are you measuring what you think you're measuring? And is that thing measuring actually applicable to you? Mm. So, for instance, if you were hiring a salesperson, would you, Berto, think you would want someone who is extroverted or introverted? Just intuition.
Yeah, extroverted.
Yeah, it makes sense. You want someone who's extroverted. Right. Salespeople, they talk to people, blah, blah. But actually, data shows that extroversion doesn't have anything to do with sales ability. You can have an introverted person who is actually very good at sales.
Wow.
Because it's more complicated than that.
Right.
You know? They're at work. When they go home, they might process things in one way, but when they're at work, it's a whole different thing.
Right, right.
So trying to figure that out, and you can see employers going like, well, I want extroverted people, and they don't have any data that they're basing it on. It's just sort of like their thought process, you know?
Actually, I know someone who's a teacher who is normally introverted. Well, the way I know them is introverted, but is a very good teacher, and that means standing daily in front of large groups of judgmental kids and being totally fine with it.
Exactly. Also, personality doesn't, when you measure personality, even if you do create a valid measure and the person doesn't lie, that doesn't mean that these people don't have ways of adapting or coping. It doesn't mean, you know, you're not testing for, do they have workarounds? Because you take a 50-year-old person who who struggles with worry.
Right.
Well, they might have like elaborate coping mechanisms that really work, that another person with only mild anxiety doesn't have.
Right.
And so it's hard. It doesn't necessarily measure for that. So, but overall, the gestalt that I have after reading the research is to answer the question, is it effective and is it worth it? I would say it depends on your funds. And it depends, I think, also on your culture. For example, if you're hiring at Microsoft and you're hiring thousands of people every day, then I think it might be worth it to throw in an IQ test, a real fast IQ test, maybe a real fast integrity test, and maybe
to weed out a little bit.
Yeah, give you a little bit more data, because you're dealing with thousands upon thousands of resumes and stuff, and it's just like, and you have a big enough data set, even among your own employees, to make some predictions, you know, based on those findings. However, like at Antioch, when I hire for professors, or when I am letting people in the program or not as students, I think it's not as relevant, you know. I'm trying to think of if I would care what the results would be on a personality test, because I'm much more I can tell pretty well, one, by the recommendation that I can get from someone else, and two, when I interact with them, and three, when I actually watch them teach, because they actually do, you know, demonstrations.
Right.
I can tell right away. Like we had a guy who applied a couple years ago, and he was way overqualified for the job. He had been a professor for decades. He was a program director at a huge program in another part of the country. And when we looked at him on resume, we're just like, I think he's hiring down to this position, you know?
Right.
Like he should be running the program, not working for it, you know? But then we watched him actually teach, and my God, it was awful.
Oh, no.
I mean, I was like, what are you talking about? I mean, I sat there for an hour and a half just sort of, he was speaking English, but I had no idea what he was talking about.
Wow.
And I knew what he was trying to get at, but I was like, that is the most convoluted. I don't even know if you understand what you're talking about, you know? And right away, I was like, you know, probably like 15 minutes in, I'm like, this guy, no freaking way.
Interesting.
Like, maybe he's a great administrator and a great program director.
But based on the resume,
But he's a terrible teacher, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway. Okay, so because, as we were saying earlier, what else do we have when we're hiring people, like at Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
You have the resume, you have the interview, you got the references, you might have their diploma and their GPA and their, you know, their other kinds of things. And you're already kind of shooting in the dark.
Yeah.
And so why not illuminate it a little bit more with a little bit more data?
What's funny is Microsoft and a lot of companies like that used to do sort of the equivalent of an ad hoc improv mini IQ test, because they would ask these kind of puzzle questions, these mental challenges, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then they got away from that because, well, I don't know the exact reasoning, but it seemed like what it was doing is it was finding them smart people, or at least smart people in some narrow sense, but not necessarily people that could do the work they wanted them to do. So it was too narrow. It was too narrow of a
focus. Well, or maybe what we could say is they were putting too much weight on that measure and not enough weight on observing their actual work.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Let's take a break. When we get back, let's talk about how to lie on these tests. All right. We're back from the break. If you haven't already gone to Facebook and liked our Facebook page and also become a member of the Facebook fan group, do so now. The Facebook fan group always has fun little conversations happening there. You can go there, share pictures and your experiences. And do you ever go to that fan group?
From time to time, yes. Or I see something that was liked on that page and then I like check it out.
Okay. Yeah. I purposely avoid it because I don't want them to feel like they can't complain about me. So
maybe I'll create a fake account and start like trolling.
Yeah.
But you can also patronize us.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Like if you want to become a patron, you could patronize us.
Oh, I see. So how do you lie on these tests? Well, on the personality tests, you can lie. On the psychopathology test, you can lie. On the integrity test, you can lie. On the IQ test, as we said, you can't lie.
You can lie as in
you can make
purposely.
It lower.
Yeah,
you could bomb it. Now, in psychology, this is a problem that I have with psychology. People who do assessments, who make a living doing assessments – when I ask them, well, are you, how sure are you that the person doesn't know how to trick you? And they're like, oh, I can tell. I can always tell. You know, but to me, I'm like, well, everyone can always tell. Like, it's like the statement, I've never seen a toupee that I couldn't identify.
Right.
It's like, well,
self-fulfilling.
What about the toupees that were so good you couldn't identify? Right. And so for a psychologist to say, I've always caught people lying, it's like, well, what about the people who lied so well that you didn't catch them?
Right.
And it's what I'm saying is, anecdotally, the psychologists who specialize in assessments that I've talked to, they are biased. They're either arrogant, in my opinion, about their abilities and the ability of their measures to detect lies, or they're so afraid of the notion that someone could lie to them that they'd go into denial about it.
Right.
Because their entire business is based on the ability to objectively measure things to objectively report on things and to tell the court, nope, I assessed him and he has schizophrenia. You know, I've assessed him and he was insane at the time of the crime, and there's no gray. It's black and white. Right. He was insane at the time of the crime, and here are my data. You know, it's the world of forensics, and particularly forensics in courts, but also just general assessments is such that it ends up breeding that kind of attitude. And as someone who chose not to go into that field because I don't particularly care for the day-to-day work of it, I don't have that need to delude myself.
Right.
And I'm here to tell you that when you actually look at these tests, especially when you become educated on how to use them, you're like, if someone was smart enough, they could probably game it, you know? Especially if they knew someone who, like me,
right?
If they came to me and said, "Kirk, how do I trick this?" I'd be like, "It's pretty easy. Here's how you do it."
Yeah,
you know, I could reveal the tips in probably two sentences right now that could ruin, that would give anyone a pretty good chance to actually trick a test, and because it's not complicated.
Yeah,
but because the ways in which they test to see if you're lying, they're not super complicated.
Right,
psychologists do not have a special ability to read people's minds.
Oh, they don't?
If we did, crime and criminal proceedings would be, you know, 3% the length, right? Humans, if they want to lie, that, you know, then it's, and they're good at it, it's hard to detect. So there's that. There's also websites that and services that that teach you how to trick these tests. Because, you know, so you have a whole industry testing people for hires. And then, of course, another industry pops up that says how to trick that.
How to trick.
It can't be illegal, right? It's just like, you know, it's just helping you with your prospects, right? So what advice do you think they give on these websites?
Well, let's see. For the personality one, they probably tell you to not answer with extremes, you know, try to like answer down the middle of the road.
Yeah.
What you would expect a vanilla person to say.
Right. So they say that, but they also said something interesting. They said you should read the company website and read their social media posts to figure out, and maybe the job description, and maybe even talk to someone at the company to kind of figure out what the culture is.
Oh, that's a good point, especially for personality.
Right.
Not so much for the theft one or the honesty one. You could generally think like, well, listen,
right,
just in general, be a Boy Scout. Right.
But I think this is good advice anyway. In fact, I tell people this when a lot of students come to me asking me for advice about how to get an internship or how to get hired. And among many things that I tell them, one of the things I tell them is go to the website, maybe even talk to someone who works there and figure out what kind of culture they have there.
Yeah.
Is it a very interactive culture, or is it a more work on your own kind of culture? Is it a small business where everyone knows each other, or is it a big business where what's the mission statement? What kinds of things are they getting involved in? What do they care about? What's the identity of that agency? So when they ask you questions, you can say things, you know, if the identity of a particular agency is to give back to the local community and marginalize, and they identify like LGBTQ people and,
right,
and poor people or something. And when you are interviewed, you could say, well, I'm passionate about helping marginalized community. I mean, you're right, not lying. You're just sort of highlighting a particular thing that you have guessed that maybe they will,
right,
they will mark down on their rating sheet. Oh, this person fits with our culture.
Like, you probably don't want to be quoting Gordon Gekko during your interview.
Unless it's that sort
unless
of thing.
It's a Wall Street interview.
Yeah. And so when you take the test, that could influence things, right? So if you figure out it's like, oh, this place is very energetic, there's a lot of extroverts. And so when you're taking the test, you know, I like to talk to people a lot. And if you're sort of borderline, you say, well, right, you know, I'll say yes to that, you know. Okay. Now, what does the research say about lying? Any ideas about what the research might say about lying on these personality tests?
About how to do it or about how to...
I don't know. Any findings that you could imagine that I might have in front of me.
Okay. Well, I mean, I would imagine that people quite often lie when taking these tests in categories where it might make them look bad.
Right.
Because they even if they're told, like, look, we're not going to... They might still feel like, oh, someone's going to read this and...
Totally. Imagine you're applying for a job at Microsoft, and one of the questions is, I lose my temper all the time.
Right.
I mean, just imagine what would go through a person's mind to say, yep, I lose my temper lots. You know?
What kind of fucking question is this? I don't lose my fucking temper.
Now, what the research actually says is that people are actually honest, usually, even when it hurts them on these tests.
Really?
There's something about... the human need to be congruent that causes people to potentially shoot themselves in the foot when they're answering the questions like this.
Did I ever tell you about my very first job interview ever?
What?
Okay, so I was in high school, and a friend of mine worked at Old Country Buffet. In fact, it's our mutual friend, Ron.
In Tacoma.
And he was like, and I was like, man, I need a job. You know, I need a job for the summer. And he's like, oh, just interview here. Anyone. He's like, anyone can get hired. You just need a pulse. It's fine. So I go and I'm like, sweet. So I get my interview and they're asking me the questions. And then, you know, tell us about, you know, maybe a flaw that you might have or
oh,
something.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, can you imagine? Young Berto. I'm like, well... Sometimes I really procrastinate, and you know, and it tends to be really an issue because, like, I'll wait till the last second on Sunday, and I won't have been doing my homework, and then I get like really, and I start basically like going to therapy with this interviewer, and you know, like, just it's horrible. But I'm not self-aware enough to know that I'm just basically digging a 6-foot hole. And eventually, you know, they're like, well, thank you very much. Obviously, I don't get a call back. And I told my friend about it. And he's like, why did you just keep your dumb mouth shut next time? You say something like, I care too much or something like that.
Right. It's really hard for people to lie is something. I mean, people will maybe edge things in a particular direction. But for the most part, the research shows that people are often honest on these kinds of tests. And what about how to prevent people from lying? What are two techniques that you can do mm-hmm. as you're administering the test that can stop people from lying?
Well, one would be actually to make them feel like it's a safe environment.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly, but maybe verbiage, either written or told to them before, with lots of caveats about how this is not going to be used to, like, you know, hold it against you or whatever.
Okay.
Like, just make them feel like it's safe. You could just, you know, that might be one thing. The other one might be, well, certainly in the way that the questions are ordered and things like that, if you make it so that it's not so obvious, like, here's all the bad ones, you know. But rather, it's like they're interspersed, so it kind of throws you off a rhythm.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose those might work, but those weren't identified in the literature. The two in the literature are to tell them, look, don't lie because we can tell when you're lying.
Oh, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
It's make him not feel safe.
Right. But then the other, but then the second one is along the lines of safety, which is also don't lie because we're actually trying to match you up with the best sort of job.
Right.
And if you lie on it, you know, it, for example, if you think we're looking for an extrovert and you end up, and you're introverted and you end up answering in all these extroverted ways,
yeah,
you're going to get a very extroverted job and you're going to hate it.
Right.
And everyone's going to hate you. So don't do that to yourself. Like okay, fill it out normally because we're trying to actually figure out if where the best fit is for
right,
you. You know,
that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. When people engage in so I don't know how to work this into a question, but I'll just tell you there are people who lie and they tend to measure when they actually measure their personality on how honest and how moral they are. The people who lie, guess what, tend to have low honesty and low morality, right?
Right.
So the people who test low honesty tend to be not very honest on tests. And they will follow these people around for hiring and for work performance. And what they find is that they are more likely to engage in deviant behaviors at work, and they're more likely to get hired than an honest person.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's interesting, right? So not only are they finding, yes, there are some people who have personality traits that cause them to lie on these tests, but they're more likely to get hired because employers and these tests can't figure out that they're lying.
Right. Which goes back to your earlier point of like, right, are you sure you can tell?
Right, exactly. All right. So we talked about the liability thing. Now let's get into maybe some privacy. Is it an invasion of privacy to force an applicant or an employee to take one of these tests?
Well, I mean, there are some things in job applications that it seems like they don't do, they can't do, or they, but
right, like on a job application, they can't say, "Do you have an STD?"
Yeah,
or right, or "Do you enjoy your sex life?"
And I don't think you can ask sexual orientation in an application,
right? But these personality tests, like the MMPI,
do include that.
Yeah,
I guess you must have to sign a waiver.
But if it's for jobs, it, yeah, you know, when it's like people don't necessarily have the choice about, you know,
right,
working, right? They've yeah, got, everyone's got to work. Well, here are some two different cases that will shed some light on how the courts rule on this. A firefighter applicant who didn't get the job, you know, he applied, he didn't get the job.
And, well, he was not a cop. He was a firefighter.
And he sued because he thought he was being discriminated against based on the personality tests that he had to take. So he you know, he and other applicants took these personality tests and he didn't get the job. And he's just like, look, it's bullshit that they assess my personality. It's an invasion of my privacy. Mm. And they're discriminating against me because of my personality. It's bullshit. They can't do that. What do you think the courts did in that situation?
Firefighter applying for a firefighter job.
Yeah.
Didn't get it because of these things. I have a feeling they went with him.
They didn't. They went with the firefighting crew. The court said that it's okay because you need to screen out people who can't handle the pressures of the job.
Oh, maybe for something that critical, it's even a...
But it's kind of weird, right? Because yeah, it's like you said, like, I bet you that, you know, it seems like the court kind of just tries to figure this out. And the more I study the law, the more I realize that a lot of things are like this.
Yeah.
It's like individual judge opinion, essentially.
Yeah, and who said it when, and then others use that as a prior.
Right. Someone applied for a security guard position in California at Target, at a Target store. And they had to take the MMPI, mm-hmm, which is one of the most revealing tests, right? And a bunch of other tests. And didn't get the job. And the security guard or applicant sued and said that the test questions were probing into his innermost feelings and were not job related.
Mm.
What do you think the court did?
Target. Oh, okay. I think then they went with him because Target, who cares? Why do you need a personality test for Target?
Yeah, but not for that the reasons, I don't think. The court agreed, finding that certain questions invaded the applicant's privacy because they asked about sexual and religious preferences.
Right.
The MMPI is extremely... I mean, the purpose of the MMPI is to measure your entire personality from front to back. And also, it asks questions that... the designers of the test don't even necessarily know logically why they're connected to certain personality traits. So it's not like when they, it's some of the questions are things like, I prefer newspaper over radio, because it was developed in like the 40s and 50s. And so there's some questions on the test. I don't know if that question's there anymore, but there's some questions on the test that logically, there's no logic. You can't look at the question and go like, oh, I know what they're measuring there.
But they measured that was a correlation?
Yeah, there's a correlation between the way people answer that question and a particular personality trait. And so there's questions on there that are like really personal and weird that are crossing the line according to the law.
That's
or the
interesting.
Court. So the takeaway is... when you're using these tests, you need to make sure that they're relevant, really, and you need to make sure you're not going too far.
Right.
And I would say the MMPI should never be used for this sort of, it's way too invasive. And that your personality test should be on the light side, let's just say. the final thing that I want to say that I found in the literature is that, so there's a lot of legal pressures to just not have assessments, right? It's
right.
Like, well, we could avoid getting in trouble if we just hire people the old-fashioned way, look at resumes. We could still get sued for those kinds of things, but at least we're not adding to the right. likelihood of being sued. But you can actually be sued for not using assessments. Why do you think that is?
Oh, because at least the assessments is some sort of standard. Versus if you're not using the assessments, it's some biased opinion from one random interviewer.
Good. There's another reason, too.
Because because other people are getting the benefit of being assessed via that method and you're not.
So. No. So the other reason is, say down the line, you have an employee who does something terrible. Who you have a truck driver who runs someone over. Or you have... a McDonald's cook who spits in all the hamburgers or something. Yeah. Well, should you not have assessed that person before putting them in that position?
Right.
The job is, if you put the wrong person in that job, they have the potential to harm a lot of customers.
I was only thinking from
the hiring. Right. But yeah, people have been sued successfully for not doing enough in the hiring process to screen out certain kinds of people. So that's interesting. All right. Well, what's the final word on this, Berto? What do you say?
Well, I think that it sounds like there is value on things like using some intellectual testing for weeding out, especially in, like you were saying, large pools of applicants for intellectually challenging jobs, especially. And it sounds like the honesty one... that's, you know, got some nice stats behind why you might want to do it, especially in jobs where, you know, inventory control might be a premium.
Or like Department of Defense or something.
Right.
Or
but it does seem
FBI.
Like this is an area that's definitely rife for abuse. And you can imagine like all of a sudden, now we're going to start doing genetic testing too.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it does make me a little nervous, but I could see how applied... judiciously, it could be useful.
Right. And along the way, our courts and advocacy groups and lawyers need to, and society and politicians need to talk about the fairness of it all.
Yeah.
We have apparently determined that some personality testing is fair if it seems to suss out a quality in that applicant that is very relevant to the job.
Right.
Whereas if you aren't doing that, then you can be sued and it's deemed as unfair. What I'll say is
before doing a deep dive on this, I was very skeptical of it because I'm generally skeptical of personality tests anyway. Because after studying it, again, the people who do this as a business are kind of they're incentivized to really prop it up as this really wonderful science.
Sure.
And in my opinion, it just isn't that great. Mm-hmm. Even the MMPI, which is supposed to be like the best, other people would argue with that, is it's sort of, I don't know. Some things are, I think, relevant at times, like the big five. When you measure people on the big five, mm-hmm. we all know those: openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, neuroticism. I think that is interesting and probably a valid measure for the most part. But when you start getting into like, is this person going to be a good developer at Microsoft?
Yeah.
Or is this person going to be a good firefighter for that matter? I just don't know if personality tests can play a role in that. I think that it's just hard to tell is the thing. It's just always, as a person who was hired and failed at hiring, I can tell you that it's just one of those things that you do your best and sometimes you completely fail at it.
Right.
So I just think we need to be careful, but I think that there is some use for it. As you said, the integrity test seems pretty low key.
Yeah.
You're just asking, you know, in general, what's your attitudes about theft and about telling the truth and all that kind of stuff. I think,
you know, it's, for example, if you can imagine Steve Jobs taking these, sure, he'd probably score very well on the IQ one.
But the integrity test,
if he was being honest, well, unless he was lying, which he probably would have been, right? Yeah. And there's things like that. Also, I just watched a documentary about Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
And that by itself is interesting, but they were talking a lot about John Hughes specifically. And like a typical artist, he's also not a well-rounded individual. So he would start projects and be super excited and very creative, and then he really would have a hard time following through and finishing them. He would be very, very late on deadlines. He would be, you know, micromanage his actors, like all these kind of, you know, have personality outbursts. But then he put out all this great creative output. So it's really hard to know who can do what.
Right. So if a movie house was hiring their next writer director and they measured those kinds of traits, like follow through.
Right.
Cantankerism, they wouldn't hire him,
right.
And they would pass up on all those great movies.
Right.
Did he do Uncle Buck? One of my, you know,
he
Chris,
did.
You know,
Planes,
Chris,
Trains, and Automobiles.
Chris Huber, his favorite movie is Uncle Buck.
Uncle Buck. Yeah.
But Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink.
Pretty in Pink.
He did Home Alone 2, though. Okay. Meaning Home Alone and Home Alone 2 and Home Alone 3.
Right. So the integrity test makes sense, and the cognitive ability test makes sense for particular jobs,
yeah.
I think. The clinical measures, I don't think, should ever be used in a setting outside of psychotherapy and forensics. And the personality tests, since research shows that they're pretty poor predictors of job performance, I think should be used sparingly and with a lot of caution.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us out there. Please take care of yourself because
you deserve it.